Well, hey, and welcome to our final seminar. I hope you guys are doing great. I wanted to first begin by answering some questions that I had by email, and I appreciate the kind words and the questions. One question was a more overarching one about, are there differences between the designation of a health coach and a wellness coach? Basically, that really depends more, in my experience, on the context. There's not an official distinction from a coaching perspective or a healthcare-related entity or organization. Ask you again to manage the background noise. If you're not speaking, do mute *6 because every movement you make is picked up. So mostly healthcare medically related organizations or groups may refer more to health coaches, while people who come from a more purely coaching perspective do a designation more of wellness coaches. So now there is a, there is an organization that certifies coaches that refer to themselves as the International Consortium of Health and Wellness Coaches. I'm familiar with them because the training program that's licensed and specially certified that I mentioned to you before that I do is certified by them to set for their exam. It's licensed and specially certified in and of itself. But, you know, and the website, and this is a response to a couple of specific questions. I think you probably got the email, but you may have missed this. It's www.newwellnessstory.com. Let me send that again. I've just changed. New life. Let me send it again. I need to be clear about that. No, here. newlifestorywellness.com. And there's online training available. So, another question that I wanted to respond to was about the a question about was there and thanks Cheryl for this question. Is with such if I can paraphrase this comment and question with such an advance in knowledge, research, and the body of information that we have now, is the idea that was indicated in the book I recommended, Younger Next Year, by Henry Lodge Jr., is it still to exercise 6 days a week for an hour? Now, I mentioned this book. I recommend it for my wellness coaches as I recommended it to you, if you're incorporating this information in what you do. I collaborated with Henry Lodge Jr. We shared a podium on a presentation. I got familiar with his work and vice versa. And doing that, moving personally, moving from like 3 days a week to work out to 6 days, has made a huge difference. It's well worth the time. You get back more than you expend the energy and the time of working out. It affects your energy, your well-being throughout the day. So basically my response to that question is, even though we've had remarkable progress in our knowledge of health and wellness, all the way to cellular, genetic, and epigenetic levels, but one analogy, I think, applies to the physical exercise component. No matter how many people you put on the job, it still takes 9 months to make a baby. So no matter how terrific the knowledge and technology supporting and informing what you do, you still got to work out. Sorry, and you can't send your body out to work out. You have to do it yourself. So other questions or other thoughts that might be helpful to talk about before we move into our final focus on the last two steps, 6 and 7 of the roadmap. questions or comments or observations. I hope this is addressing the responses that a number of you sent to me about what you most wanted to focus on and what you hope to walk away with. I'm really interested, and I'll definitely will save some time at the end for discussion, because I'm interested in hearing, did this meet your expectations? Did you really get what you wanted from this? You know, overall, we've looked at two systems, a more focused one on self-regulation of states of mind, the neural conditioning program, you have that single sheet now, and the roadmap system that we've spent more time to understand the algorithm, the pattern of behavior, emotion, attachment, of how we construct stories, and then how to apply the mind and brain sciences to strategic coaching to create changes that last. That's the real challenge, to create change, collaborate with someone, and to make them ones that last. And we're going to talk especially about the P of the roadmap, program new identity, because that's what makes change that lasts. So that's a preview of an immediate coming attraction in just a bit. So anything else to discuss, ask, question, or any feedback at this point? Well, I'll go to lecture mode and move us into the last material, and definitely save some time at the end. So be sure you hang on and jot down anything you want to comment about. Okay, we've discussed the power of story and the concept of creating your own wellness story. We've looked together at how different this notion of creating your own story is from fitting into someone else's protocol, having someone else ghostwrite your story, even of simply like adding a diet plan or an exercise program to what you do. Remember, we talked about if you really want to break a habit, focus on the system. And to really break a habit, you have to disrupt the one that's there now in order to create a new one. You can't just lay another one on top and think it's going to override what's there in your brain, because anything you believe, anything that you do in a regular behavior pattern, it's an anatomical reality in your brain. Change can occur, and that's why it needs to be in this strategic way. So we've discussed the first five steps in the roadmap for a new wellness story. Recognize authorship, own your story, assess the plot and storylines, decide what to change, and map changes. So steps 6 and 7 will address how to create new wellness experiences and identity. So step 6, author new experiences. We trust our stories. They're our reality. When our stories and our behaviors don't match, we experience disharmony. We have to change one or the other to restore harmony. Sometimes we revise our stories. Sometimes we even change how we see reality. We've considered if your wellness story doesn't allow you to do certain things. If your story is a procrastinator, it will disallow you or justify not finishing early or on time. If your story says you don't know how to work out, you'll let out this assumption. So at first, the idea of change will create excitement, the anticipation of the hope and expectation of the dopamine system. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, anxiety about giving up that default mode and the actual experience of change. Then expansion, then finally mastery. So here are the AAA principles of change to author a new story. The 3 A's, awareness, acceptance, and action. And these are in your outline. 1, you're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each storyline with a question, is it working? And make it a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business career story. Again, is it working, yes or no? Your relationship story. Your money story. When I ask people what they most look forward to and what they're most afraid of for the next chapter or chapters of their lives, they often respond with vague dreams but specific fears. The top of the list of long-term concerns, health and money. A not-so-secret to success is that you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some, pardon me, some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you'll still have to pay in some way. If you, for example, incur debt in order to purchase something before you've earned the money, you simply end up paying more for it, both monetarily and emotionally. Another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who find a way to enjoy paying the price. I'm doing it right now. I love this. I think you're going to each make such a difference in so many lives. And this means it's not just easy to pay. It's not even paying. The price is whatever you need to do to generate exactly what you want. And that works really well if it's your purpose and your passion. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story, positive or negative, based on present or past or future, adaptive or maladaptive, it takes the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as the belief of abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Now, here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and it assumes its own momentum. Remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it, the author of it. Here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. 3. You're writing your own story. Decide what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they may not be quite sure exactly what they do want. Here's a neuroscience and law of attraction question combined. How does the brain work like a travel agent? First two questions a travel agent asks. Remember in the days of travel agents, now it's travel websites. Same two questions though. Where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? A goal is like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, you make a map, and determine the time. Now, a caveat, to know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. And what you resist, you draw toward you. Speaking of the law of attraction, resistance is an engagement. It's very much like saying anger is absolutely as passionate an attachment as love. And most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. You're writing your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates had fashioned a vision with specific goals for their life and business. 5 decades later, those 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group. The subsequent study was done at Dartmouth with undergraduates. There, 93%. It was the same. 7% had specific goals. Those 7% ended up with 93% of the assets 2 decades after graduation. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. Focus enhances when you have a specific plan and strategy. Review from the workbook, I would suggest the exercise 11 Steps to Ignite Success, beginning page 3.6. It's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal? Measurement and time. Where and when? The travel agent questions. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by July 31st, 2019. Here's a good idea. I want to save more money for retirement. Here's a goal. I will pay myself first by setting up an automatic transfer of $500 to my retirement fund the first day of each month. Then, write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, a quantum leap. Getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs, and every August riding on the coast of Maine. Now, you guys have got to substitute your own goals there. Then, reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. That etches the rewiring of your brain by that vision. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to take for progress. For example, you feel overwhelmed at work with the amount of tasks. Identify one specific thing that you can do in the next hour, and one thing a little bit broader you can do in that day to give you some traction. This focus on a simple, specific action creates a sense of effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. Here's a story some of you have heard me tell before. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Since he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed to average 24 miles a day and completed the run in 143 days. At the end of the race, he was interviewed and asked how did he keep himself going when he was exhausted and knew he had thousands of miles ahead. His response, I just kept running to the next telephone pole. Now, that's a system, and that system has a goal. He knew where those telephone poles ended up. So that's, I think, a great example of a system and an ultimate goal. Another idea, divide up your work, focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. Here's an example of that. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of my first-year supervisors had a really puzzling picture on the wall. It was a photograph in which everything seemed just curiously out of focus. I met with him every week, and I'd glance at the photograph until finally, toward the end of the year, I mustered enough. I finally asked him about it. He said, "Look carefully, Dave. What do you see?" I walked over to the photograph to get a closer view. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value. My experience and considerable interest in photography didn't help. I said, "Steve, the only thing I notice is that there's only one branch of one tree in focus in the entire picture." I thought I was torquing him. He nodded. He said, "That's exactly why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things may seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing you could have in focus and see clearly, which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. It takes 25 to 30 days to etch a new pathway in your brain to make it permanent for simple behaviors. Write your new story consistently for it to become the default mode. Overall wellness is not based on some big monumental choice, but on little things. If you plan to run 30 minutes on the treadmill, but after 10 get off, convince you're a little stiff, it's one small choice, no big deal, right? You resolve to cut empty calories, but then grab a few peanut M&Ms from the candy bowl, not really thinking about the choice, because no single M&M, not even 5, caused anyone to have diabetes. Yet our wellness is the cumulative results of thousands of such choices. Each individually segmented may seem innocuous or rationalized away or justified into oblivion. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, this is all really simple. Good parents have known this for centuries. Sometimes it just takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. We can foster change by conscious practices and effective tools. An infinite sea of new patterns and possibilities can be created to further new goals. The caveat? You have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and write new script for new experiences. A new story has to replace the old one. We have to put it in the output channel in order to complete the cycle in the brain. There are no shortcuts, since long-term change requires consistent practice, repetition, to groove new neuronal pathways and establish new neuronal networks. What we know now and what we've been talking about is there are effective and scientifically proven efficient methods to accelerate change and ensure transformation and make it last. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback. To your spouse or partner, ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. To your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? Then, how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Babemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that goes against the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest and initially positive feedback frames the misbehavior to have a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself. He remembers who he is and why he is important to the life of the village. This may have been the original 360-degree feedback. Now, even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered and reconnect with our true essence. Find people who already successfully do what you want and get what you want. Research what they do in order to do your version of it. Ask, learn, question, but make it your story. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart, it's that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. An interesting statistic. After giving a complete presentation about the benefits of their service or product, more than 60% of the time, seasoned salespeople forgot to ask for the order. How to ask is a crucial factor. Ask clearly, confidently, sincerely. Virginia Satir, the well-known family therapist, was hired by the Michigan State Department of Social Services to submit a proposal on how to restructure the Department of Social Services to better serve their client population. 60 days later, she provided the department with a 150-page report. Their response to her was twofold. This is the most amazing report, and how did you come up with all these brilliant ideas? She said, well, I just asked all the social workers in your department what it would take for the system to work better. Now, as a sidebar here, you may have noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide. Compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance. Instead of waiting for good luck, luck is defined as probability taken personally, or my favorite, narcissism meets chance. There's a review, I won't go over here, but there's a review of research on goal setting initiated by one of the premier and original executive coaches in this country, Marshall Goldsmith, on page 3.5 in your workbook. It helps us understand two essential components. Why people give up on goals, which is what the study was, but if we look at this of how effective goal setting can be, it can ensure long-term achievement. In other words, the reverse of each of these is success insurance. 10, you're writing your own story, take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get it rejected, you still don't. What do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told that he would never make it. There was already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. Nonetheless, he went to 12,500 homes and talked to 6,500 people. He simply asked them 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? And then he added as he was leaving, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In his first month, he took in $72,500. In his first year, he netted over $1 million. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Beon was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment? And he said, yeah, I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. So when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6, but nobody told Cliff this because he was shuffling along while they were running. Nobody talked. They were all asleep and couldn't tell him he wasn't supposed to keep running. He shuffled along for over 3.5 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. For tens of thousands of years before books and computers, we transmitted our essence and principles by story. Story linked to the past, organized the present, illuminated the future. Story allowed us to connect with each other's humanity and the paths crossed on the long journeys out of Africa to populate the rest of the world. Then the anatomy and physiology of our brains grew by putting thoughts and feelings into stories. Stories informed, instructed, inspired, governed, organized. Story is the most powerful way humans communicate. Stories give birth to possibility. Stories are a way that we resonate with our earlier selves, connect with others, and create a roadmap to proceed. Your story is yourself, your life, and what will survive you. At some point in the distant future, all that will be left of you, all that will survive you, is your story. Be sure to get it right. Step 7. Program new identity to incorporate and sustain the changes. Remember, we talked about that our identity is the most powerful force of the human psyche, and whatever changes we make, we also need to address how to change and transform that operating model of ourselves, our operating system, that core identity, because that's what makes change permanent. When we address that, and that's something we do as coaches with our clients, when we address that, it helps make change permanent and ultimately the default mode that is consistent with one's identity. Now, you know, we talked about, in terms of operating systems, let's revisit that for just a moment. Behavioral patterns and belief systems downloaded from early in life, parents, first years of life, experiences, important people, become automatic to operate without observation or awareness. Neuroscientists estimate that almost 95% of our behaviors and core beliefs are pre-programmed in the unconscious mind and operate on autopilot. We rarely ever examine these, but especially we do, ideally, when a story doesn't work. We can also examine it to enhance a story. So, let's look at how we may create two stories simultaneously, and this is what you may want to listen for in collaborating with your clients. The surface story, that we run our lives with conscious intentions and aspirations, this is the logical, conscious, intellectual story that we're aware of. This is the 5, maybe at most 10%. This includes, this is what I want from life, or, you know, I plan to exercise 6 days a week, and I plan to create a healthier diet plan. Yet, the conscious mind is a tiny processor that controls the mind and brain system in the single digits percent of time. So, at the same time, an unconscious story ghostwrites behavior sometimes in a different direction than conscious intention. And here's how that can sound. Well, you know, I think I'll start working out next week. Or, you know, I really can't get what I want. Or the system keeps me, I don't have time. I don't really think I have what it takes. Many compromises occur when these two stories are written simultaneously and go in opposite directions. You know, I want to generate more money and create wealth. Whether it's conscious or not, and some of these are way more conscious than we want to admit, I don't think I have what it takes. Or, you know, what if I try my best and then still fail and I'll be really embarrassed? Or here's another example. I want to claim my freedom and become totally my own person. But the shadow story is my spouse or my boss acts like I'm taking it away when I'm from him or her when I'm self-sufficient. So this is in the workbook, and I just want to highlight it here. In business, a mission statement is a statement of an organization's primary purpose, the strategies to achieve that purpose, and its fundamental values. A personal mission statement can clarify and provide meaning to overall activities, adds focus and commitment to what's being done. Consider a mission statement for your wellness story. A mission statement contains four elements: ideals, purpose, strategies, and goals. And ideals, as you've seen in the workbook and as we've discussed, the core values that motivate and guide you. They define who you are and what's important to you in terms of your own ideals. When you live up to them, that's where self-esteem comes from. Your purpose, what you want to accomplish, consistent with your ideals. Strategy is simply the art and science of a plan of action. And goals that we often focus on in coaching, effective goals are those that are SMART goals: specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. So, think about creating a personal mission statement and a wellness mission statement. Write it down. Read it every day. So here are some state-of-mind patterns. This is something that you'll see in working with your clients simply because it's human nature. You may see some patterns more quickly in a wellness story than you do in other aspects of life. A new pattern of behavior can occur for a sustained period of time, but then it can be subjugated to other, even opposing mindsets or stories to return to a comfort zone, a reversion to the familiar. For example, somebody who's overweight plans a weight loss program and achieves an ideal body weight, 30 pounds lighter. As soon as the target's reached, if it's not incorporated as part of an identity, the nutritional plan is relaxed and the weight's gained back. Then maybe the diet's resumed. Or an independent business person carries out a set number of hours each week to do marketing. This plan, when it's adhered to, results in a successful business. But when it's relaxed and the marketing efforts lapse, business wanes. Then the marketing time is reinstated. So it's kind of a roller coaster. So in each of these situations, an individual has specific motivated attempts at self-regulation, a plan, but then both lapse as part of a cycle and have to be reinstated. So this is what we want to address: the system and the identity that results from the execution of that system, rather than a lapse with relaxation into a comfort zone, into the old default mode, the old pattern, the old identity. Now, some patterns that cycle quickly come to attention, and they can be addressed readily. But some patterns have extremely long time cycles, and recognition occurs gradually. An example would be the aging process, and the recognition for the need for exercise and nutrition crystallized by an event such as a heart attack. Every day when I go to the gym, I see people who fall into that category who were probably threatened by their doctor or scared by such an event, and it's obvious they've begun to work out for the first time after they were scared into it. So this is a way in terms of what we're doing and looking at wellness coaching and a wellness system. This is a way to address that on the front end, so those long-term, barely recognizable patterns until something bad happens doesn't happen and can be addressed. So, another way to look at it is to follow success trails. Have you said some version of the following? I want to change careers, but I don't know what I do instead. I'd like to really get in shape, but I'm not quite sure where to start or how to do it. I want to play a bigger game, but I don't quite know what that is. Decide how you want to expand. Then pick success trails to follow. Seek out a mentor, books, program, or resources to help you. Watch someone who's doing what you want to do. Ask if you can pick their brain or follow and come to know their system. Let me give you a simple example. When my good buddy Art heard that I was transitioning from psychoanalytic practice and completed my professional coach training, he flew to Houston to take me to dinner. A few years earlier, he did an extremely early retirement from IBM. He was the lead salesperson in the country of 10,000 people in the whole healthcare segment to start his own corporation. He told me how when he began, he chose five very successful people, asked them to lunch or dinner to pick their brains about what he was about to do. He advised me to do the same. And he said, this one counts. You just have four more. It worked for both of us. Some business people with instant global recognition still pick his brain for substantial picking fees. So let's look for a moment at choice enhancement. Consider these applications to emotions and choices. Increased tension produces emotional regulation. Stress can move somebody into an emotional pattern more characteristic of a much earlier age. Increased emotion narrows perspective, can create tunnel vision. But paradoxically, attempting to use logic and reason with somebody when they're already escalated makes them more torqued up and more pushback pressure, less able to access reason. Stress derails balanced big picture thinking to focus on the more recent and the more emotionally charged event. This is why self-regulation is the most important characteristic you can help your client develop. Again, make use, if you haven't, of that webinar on the homepage of MentorPath, Master States of Mind. Feel free to share it with clients if you'd like. Here's a quote from a Buddhist teaching. And this is an application to what we've talked about. When you're in a state of mind, the first order of business is to regulate feelings to get grounded and centered. When you're relaxed and centered, you have the greatest access to all of your states of mind, all of the information you possess. The Buddhist teaching, return to the earth now if your mind is troubled and your heart is uncertain. For it is by returning to the beginning that we can clearly see the path. What more eloquent way could you say than to get grounded? So, to look for just a moment at change and transition. The brain is a very effective and efficient machine. It doesn't waste energy. It takes a path of least resistance to use neurons already familiar with the task. So our brains incline toward repeating an old story. To think creatively, new neural pathways have to be developed outside the cycle of usual experience. Stimulation for new insight is a circumstance where the brain can't predict what will happen next. The catalyst for insight is a novel stimulus, new information, new context, a powerful question from a mentor coach. The change is the event, the situation. The transition is the process, the internal story of change, a shift in orientation, of self-definition, ultimately of identity. This is the P of the roadmap. Program new identity to internalize the changes, to sustain and enhance them. And remember that Jung said, the most important problems can't be solved. They have to be outgrown. So in summary then, let's look at what I see as the most frequent mistakes made in writing a new wellness story. These might be helpful to know for early recognition. One, not knowing that you don't know. How can people know they don't know something? We believe what we know, which blinds us to our ignorance. So we're listening for various kinds of biases that people have. This, in turn, causes us to be blind to signs that we may be mistaken. So to know to ask is half the answer. And a question about a blind spot or a bias is a perturbation of a closed system of the client. It disrupts that system so that both of you can get curious about it. Two, stopping at the first right answer. When we're solving problems or writing a new story, we may stop at the first reasonable action. Now, this could be a totally correct strategy, but it also could stop us from considering other right answers, other correct strategies that can be even more effective. So we might ask, and then what? Or what else? Here's an introduction to number three with a brief quiz. Five frogs sat on a log. They all considered their option. Four, though, planned their strategy and then decided they would jump off. So how many were left? Well, five were left. They only planned and decided. They didn't commit to act. Number three is procrastination. I'm talking about some of the broad things here, the big patterns. Putting off an exercise program, not paying yourself first, not saving for emergencies, not saving for retirement, taking care of others but not yourself. Most of us live our lives as though there were an unlimited amount of time left. We have little sense of urgency that can contribute to a lack of focus. When the two-minute warning sounds in football, a team sometimes achieves more in that final 2 minutes than they did in the previous 28. Now, the Texans are an exception, but never mind. This imminent deadline, a limited, finite amount of time to accomplish goals, focuses concentration and increases effort. In our lives, we only rarely have a two-minute warning. We play as if the notion of finite time is only an abstraction, something we acknowledge but may not seem to internalize. Life is finite. It's just that the game clock is invisible. Four, inefficient energy management. Managing energy is a key to success. This begins with knowing your strengths, your limitations, your biological cycles, when you perform best, and especially how to regulate states of mind in order to enter the state that is optimum for a particular task or a performance. Five, ambiguity. If you're unclear about what options are available and don't know what it would be like to pursue them since you haven't done it before, this uncertainty can lead to a decision paralysis. So often what looks like resistance in a client, for example, can simply be a lack of clarity of what the next specific step is. People are more likely to change when a new behavior is crystal clear, not vague or absent or abstract or too broad. Eat a healthier diet is vague and abstract. The possibilities of eat healthier or save for the future are limitless. Where to begin? When you want to affect change, script specific behaviors, a system, and the next step clearly in view. Six, too many choices. This is a number of studies that some of you are very familiar with, that someone can be paralyzed by having too many choices. At some point, choice debilitates rather than liberates, and someone retreats to the default mode of simply not making a choice. So that's why, for example, when you give a recommendation to someone for mentor coaching services at the end of a discussion, I favor a simple, specific recommendation not a bunch of choices or programs, because that client may not be in the most informed position to know to make the best choice. And in my view, that's what the client pays us for. We're the professional. We make an assessment. We make a recommendation of what's most indicated at this time, and we're very clearly presenting that to the client. And seven, the true a lack of persistence. The truly challenging, courageous part is not the initial decision or the initiation of a new order of things. It's the willingness to stay the course. This is from a fellow Texan, I do have to admit. Most people give up when they're about to achieve success. They quit on the one-yard line. That was Ross Perot. So, now in conclusion, we've talked about the wellness story from perspectives of genes, cells, mind, brain, and story. Now, another final word about genes, specifically epigenetics. Epigenetics is the study of the ways in which our experiences change the way genes operate. Our experiences program how active our genes will be. There's a difference between having a gene and that gene expressing its signature proteins to have a particular effect. Of more than 30,000 genes, some express constantly, some only at a particular time in life, some only for a certain organ, some only for certain behavioral or emotional prompts. We now know that our genes and our environment, including our behavior, are reliant on each other. What we do as well as what we eat will turn genes on or off. Genes cannot operate independently of their environment, internal and external. Our nutrition, our emotions, our social interactions, all are interactive. A simple example, when you eat broccoli, broccoli contains a form of B6, which prompts a specific enzyme to produce the amino acid L-tryptophan, which contributes to synthesize dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that, among other things, stabilizes mood. So, a final word then. Your true story. The residual outcome of your past thoughts, feelings, and actions are not who you are. What you have done with your body and eating may not be your true body self. What you are is what you're creating this moment. Write your genuine life story, your informed wellness story. Engage and create your true body self. Write the truest story possible. A small boy approached Walt Disney and asked him, "How can I be like you one day?" And Disney took this very seriously. He thought for a moment. He held up his finger to let the boy know he was thinking about it. Finally, he said four words. Think, believe, dream, dare. And remember the most important lesson from everything I've said during our time together. Just keep going to the next telephone pole. Now, I want to say we are going to do a discussion mode in just a moment, but I want to say this to be sure that each of you hear me while we're still in lecture mode. It's been a true privilege to work with you for these four seminars. I've learned too, I hope you have, and that it's met your expectations. Thank you for your energy, your presence, your feedback, and I hope we'll have opportunities to cross paths and collaborate again. So hold on, we're going to get to discussion mode. Okay, what you got? Questions, thoughts, clarifications, anything that you'd like to discuss a bit more from this or any of the seminars? You cannot have not had any questions. I could not have been that clear. Any thoughts or any feedback? What's your major takeaway? Anyone? The main thing that is the first thing you think about as a takeaway from this series, the entire series.
Hello.
Hey, Dave.
Let me
go ahead.
From the woman who first spoke and said hello, what's your big takeaway? Are you there? I said hello back. I did my part. Was that Joe who spoke second?
Yes, sir.
Please, go ahead.
The takeaway is the two examples you gave today about the telephone pole, running to the telephone pole, next telephone pole, and Walt Disney. And I say that because even this weekend, I was looking at some old files that I had, some dreams and visions that I had written down. And I was unsure about those visions 8 years ago. And now, 8 years later, I'm like, wait a minute, I was onto something, but I abandoned those dreams, so I didn't make it to the next telephone pole. And so that kind of stuck out to me.
That's great. That's a great example and self-discovery. You know, sometimes it's not easy to really examine our own story because, you know, we don't want to disrupt the order of things. One of the most memorable single sentences ever said to me was... a very well-known publisher. We were talking about publishing a money book of mine at the time. He said, you know, Dave, I don't know how to tell my money story to myself in order to know what to change. And you can substitute wellness story or life story or anything. It's difficult to be subjectively and objectively aware of something we do by the default mode. But remember two things. Whenever we recognize something that's unconscious from our operating system, it's no longer unconscious. And you now have a systematic way to go about regulating states of mind and a seven-step roadmap system to understand and change whatever story you apply it to or to create a new story. You have the principles, the essence of how to do that, how to deconstruct and reconstruct a story. So I'll be interested in, as you begin to think about this, perhaps apply it, I'll be interested in what kind of feedback you have about how really useful it is as you begin to incorporate it. So thanks for that. Other response, what's a big takeaway? Your most important takeaway from this series.
Hi, this is Sherry.
Please, go ahead. Thank you.
You know, one of the things that's striking me is, and then has me very excited, is the idea of positive psychology and how much in alignment the ideas are with positive psychology and cognitive psychology. Having the opportunity to take those ideas and apply them in a logical way. Because I think I'm a college professor, so as a teacher,
uh-huh.
I mean, I can sit there and teach you information, but the opportunity to apply it is really where the juice is. It's not about all this thinking about it. You want to actually do something with the information. So that part has me excited. I want to be able to take the information and just apply it and give people the technology to make changes that they would like to make in their life.
And I think that's really important, and that's one of the many different disciplines that I have integrated. When I said the mind and brain sciences, that has been a very important aspect. And we know from appreciative inquiry that you can get much better results to look at the questions in a positive way rather than seeking and solving problems, because human systems, our minds and brain, follow the trajectory of what is asked about. So if you ask about possibilities, if you ask about things that can be done, that boots up an entirely different mindset than if you ask about problems. There have been some really incredible studies that have been done on this in a corporate setting. Just by the initial question, it determines a mindset and the focus of the subsequent conversation. And we know from coaching that asking the right question has more power than giving people the right answers. And that doesn't work for a number of reasons. People don't like to have their ghost story, their story ghostwritten and they simply reject it. So, great point. Thank you for mentioning that, Sherry. Other comments? Any other feedback? Well, I want to say again, I really appreciate all of the feedback that you've given and your participation. Let me upsell for just a minute for those of you who are interested. There is a CTA four-part teleseminar series that I'll begin this same time slot 1 week from tonight on coaching money mastery. It's the other area that, you know, I really focus a lot of attention and writing and training to, and I think you'll find it beneficial. You know, if you have or use or spend or want to generate money, just if that's the case. So thank you very much. I appreciate it all. And again, if you have any questions, let me know. I hope that our paths cross again, and I'm available if you have questions. Let me know. Shoot me an email. I promise I'll respond. So thanks again very, very much. It's been a privilege to work with you. Bye now. See you guys.